tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from the golden age of radio. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, science fiction. Later on, a story from the Radio Guild. But right now, it's the Hall of Fantasy, with the tale, The Return from Death. This mutual episode from April 6th, 1953.
And now, the Hall of Fantasy. Welcome to the Hall of Fantasy. Welcome to the series of radio dramas dedicated to the supernatural, the unusual, and the unknown. Come with me, my friends. We shall descend to the world of the unknown and forbidden, down to the depths where the veil of time is lifted and the supernatural reigns as king. Come with me and listen to the tale of The Return from Death.
You mean that you can bring him back to life?
I know I can. There, everything's ready. Will you step back, David?
Of course.
How to turn on the machine? You'll see for yourself what I mean. How to induce the charge?
How much voltage are you using?
25,000. That's enough. Now, look at him, David.
Wait. He's alive. He was dead, but now... Now he's alive.
In just a moment, the Hall of Fantasy will present The Return from Death. And now for our story. An original tale of fantasy by Richard Thorne entitled The Return from Death.
Dr. Jason Sinclair was a brilliant man. He was one of my instructors at medical school. He gave of his knowledge freely, creating in the students a desire to learn, imparting some of his own enthusiasm for his subject into the minds of his students. I always looked forward to his classes. After I received my degree, I lost track of him for several years. But one evening, when I was ready to leave the research center... Hello?
May I speak to David Cummings?
Speaking.
David, this is Jason Sinclair.
Dr. Sinclair, it's good to hear from you.
I was wondering if you'd remember me.
Of course I would. All of us who studied under you owe you more than we can ever repay.
What are you doing this evening?
Well, actually nothing.
I'd like to see you, David. Why don't you come over to the house tonight?
It'll be a pleasure. You still live at the same place?
Yes, the world may change, David, but Jason Sinclair and his habits don't. I'll be expecting you about 8:30. See you, David. Come in.
Good to see you, Dr. Sinclair.
You can forget the doctor part of it, David. Call me Jason. You're not in school now.
How long has it been? I've lost all track of time.
You received your degree in 1943. It's been 10 years.
I didn't realize it was so long. You haven't changed, you know, Jason.
Only 10 years older, that's all. Oh, do you remember my daughter, David? I believe she was
That's right. She was in my class. How are you, Elaine?
Fine, David. It's good to see you again.
Are you working with your father?
Yes.
Sit down, David. Sit down. Can I pour you a drink?
Not right now, thanks. Are you still with the college, Jason?
No, I left there some time ago.
Oh, really? How come?
I wanted to devote more time to research.
I see.
David, are you happy with your present position?
Well, I hadn't stopped to think about it. I guess I am.
That's a shame.
Why do you say that?
I was wondering if you'd like to work with me.
I don't know. I hope you'll forgive me for hesitating, Jason, but I've been with Associated Chemical for several years.
I understand, David. It's only natural that you'd hesitate.
Why, of course. Dad doesn't want to push you into this, David. You're perfectly free not to accept.
Of course, I would like to have you with me. I can guarantee you more than you're getting now.
Well, that's a pretty good inducement.
I'd like to work with you, David. I'm sure you'll find it interesting.
What are you working on, Jason?
Come, I'll take you downstairs, and you can see for yourself. Do you remember some of our discussions years ago about death and the possibility of bringing back to life a man that medical science had pronounced dead?
Yes, I do.
Well, that's what I've been working on.
Oh? Have you had any success?
Quite a lot. More than I'd expected this early. I'll show you. The rabbit you see on the table is dead. I'd like to have you examine it, if you will.
Yes, he's dead, I'd say, for at least 2 hours.
Very close, David. A few minutes longer, that's all.
What do you intend doing?
Let's see. I've already given him the preliminary injection, David, to save time. You know, of course, that all life has a connection with electricity. We think we send out small charges of electricity along the nerve network, which in turn activates our muscles.
You mean that you can bring him back to life?
I know I can. There, everything's ready. Will you step back, David?
Of course.
Now to turn on the machine. You'll see for yourself what I mean. Now to induce the charge.
How much voltage are you using?
25,000. That's enough. Now look at him, David.
What? He's alive. This animal's alive.
Yes, David.
But there's something strange about him.
How do you mean?
I don't know. I can't explain it.
You're imagining it, David. You saw him dead, now you see him alive. The sight is foreign to your mind.
Perhaps.
I've learned the secret, David. Now we can restore to the living those who have passed into the realm of death.
Although Jason Sinclair passed over my objection, I still couldn't get the thought from my mind. There was something strange about the animal. Something seemed to be missing. We went back upstairs. Jason left the room to get the papers he'd written, explaining the various steps he'd taken in his experiments. I was left alone with Elaine.
Did you see it?
Yes. It's amazing.
Are you going to work with him?
I think so.
David, I wish you wouldn't.
Why not?
Did you notice the rabbit after he returned it back to life?
Yes.
David, didn't it look foreign to you, as if something were missing?
I noticed something, but I couldn't put my finger on it.
That's what I mean. David, I don't think you should do it.
I don't see why, Elaine. Think what a boon this will be to the world.
Will it, David?
Well, of course.
I'm not too sure about that.
Elaine, you, of all people, should have faith in your father.
I don't, though, David.
Why not?
Because I don't believe that once an animal is dead, it should be returned to life. It should remain dead. Because when it dies, its spirit dies with it. And when Dad brings these creatures back, the animal lives, true enough. But, David, it's like an automaton. The body may live, but the thing which gave it personality is dead.
I'm still going to work with him, Elaine.
Do you know what you're getting into? Dad is a precisionist. He'll experiment and experiment until finally he'll want to try it on a man. And where is that man going to come from, David? Where is he going to come from?
I was in the house of Jason Sinclair. A few minutes before, I'd been witness to a scene which had amazed me. As I saw it, I made up my mind to work with Jason. We went back upstairs, and when Jason left the room, his daughter tried to dissuade me from my decision.
I'm serious, David. Where is he going to come from?
I don't know.
Then you're going to go through with it?
Yes.
I warned you, David. Remember that.
Here are the papers, David.
Oh, thank you.
Look them over. They contain all the notes I've made on the experiment.
I will, Jason.
Are you going to work with me?
Yes.
Good. You'll have to give the organization for which you're working now at least 2 weeks' notice.
Of course.
If you like, you can live here with us. Do you have any relatives, David?
No.
Glad to hear that. I'll see you in 2 weeks.
2 weeks later, I moved in with Jason Sinclair and we began working. We conducted experiments, making a few changes, altering the content of the preparatory injection, resetting the amount of voltage required, progressing from the lower stages of animal life ever higher. And then one night, he told me what he intended doing next.
David, have you heard of Terry Whalen?
Whalen? Oh, yes. He's going to die next week for the murder of that old man.
That's right. We're going down to the prison tomorrow to see him.
Why, Dad?
Whalen has no relatives. No one to bury him after his death except for the state.
What do you mean?
I believe we can have access to his body after he's executed.
You mean you intend using him as a subject?
That's correct.
But if we're successful, Jason, won't it be dangerous to return a killer back to life?
Not if we watch him. Not if we can destroy his urge to kill.
Dad, I don't think you should do it. He's a dangerous man.
Nonsense, Elaine. We'll increase the amount of voltage, David. Enough to destroy that part of his brain which motivates his desire to kill. Perhaps he'll completely change.
Use someone else, Dad, not Terry Whalen.
Where would I get someone else, Elaine?
We rose early the following day and drove out to the prison. Jason was well known and thought highly of in official circles. We were allowed to talk to the warden, and Jason convinced him that Whalen's body would be used for medical research, but he neglected to tell him how it would be used. Then we were allowed to talk to Whalen.
Just a few minutes, Dr. Sinclair.
I understand.
Who are you?
My name is Jason Sinclair, Mr. Whalen.
What do you want?
To talk to you.
So talk?
You're to be executed next week, Mr. Whalen.
Look, if you come here just to tell me that, I got a surprise for you. I already know it.
I'm a doctor, Terry. We'd like to use you as the subject of an experiment.
Sure, go right ahead.
Not now, Terry. After you've been executed.
Ah, what do you mean? Where are you from? You from one of those medical colleges? Listen, I don't go for that stuff. No, sir, if that's what
no,
you're here
Terry.
For,
I have proposed to bring you back to life.
You mean after I'm dead?
That's right.
You're crazy. You sound like you've been in stir too long.
I'm serious. We can do it.
You mean you can actually bring me back to life?
That's right.
That's pretty good. And they can't punish me a second time, can they? They can't kill me twice.
You agree to it, then?
Sure, Sawbones. Sure, I agree to it. Anything to get another chance.
Jason made arrangements for an ambulance to pick up Whalen's body a short time after the execution. That night, the night Whalen settled his debt with the state, a storm broke. We stayed at the house and waited. The ambulance was already at the prison, waiting for its passenger.
What time is it?
Almost 12.
I wish you hadn't arranged all this, Dad.
Nonsense, Elaine.
Well, that is 12 o'clock.
Time is to die.
It's only taken 3 hours, even in this storm, to get back here, Jason.
That's right. When they do, David, they'll have Whalen with them.
We waited there at the house. The storm was the perfect background for the strange mood which had seized hold of each of us. A short time after 3, the ambulance pulled into the driveway and we went down and opened the basement door. They brought him in and sat him on a table.
Yes, that's right. Thank you. You ready, David?
I guess so.
I'll prepare the hypodermic then. We'll give him 20 cc's of this.
No more than that?
Of course not. There. That does it. Now, help me attach the wires.
Dealing with the death has always frightened me.
It's foolish, my boy. As a scientist, you should never allow yourself to be subjective about things. You must be completely objective. There. I believe that'll do it.
Dr. Sinclair.
Anything wrong, David?
Maybe we ought not go through with this.
You can't turn back now?
No, I suppose not.
Shall we begin? Switch it on. It has a pleasant sound, hasn't it, David? What's the reading?
10,000.
Increase the charge. The reading?
15,000. 20,000. 23,000. 24,000. 25,000. Shall we stop?
No. You must destroy his desire to kill.
26,000. 27,000.
That's enough. Turn it off. place the contact microphone in his chest, Ed.
Yes, Jason.
Listen, David. You're listening to the sound of his heart, David. The beating heart of a dead man. We've succeeded. We've brought him back from death.
It was a wet and stormy night. Jason Sinclair hovered over the body on the table in the center of his basement laboratory. I stood just behind him, watching a dead man return to life.
Listen, David. You're listening to the sound of his heart. We've brought him back from death. Remove the contact, Mike.
Jason, look at his eyes. They're open.
Yes, I see. Waylon, can you hear me? Answer me, Waylon. Think what this means, David. He can tell us what it was like to be dead, the first man ever to know the secret. Waylon, answer me.
The strap's taken off.
All right, let's loosen them. How do you feel, Waylon?
Look out, Jason. He's getting off the table.
Nothing to be afraid of, David.
He didn't limp before, did he?
No. Some of the motor section of the brain must have been damaged.
He's coming toward us.
Don't move. You might frighten him.
Look at his eyes, Jason. They're not human.
Quiet, David. He's trying to say something. I can't understand you, Waylon. What are you trying to say?
He's patting you on the back.
I'm trying to thank me, no doubt. All right, that's enough, Waylon. I understand your appreciation. Take his hand away from my throat, David.
That's enough, Waylon.
Look out, David.
I see him.
You knocked him out.
Yes.
You shouldn't have done that.
Are you serious, Jason? I was protecting myself and you, for that matter.
He wouldn't have hurt me.
You didn't seem to think that when he had his fingers around your throat.
Well, I admit that I was frightened.
All right. What are we going to do with him?
Well, keep him down here. Teach him to talk again. Seems to have lost the power of coherent speech.
Look at him, Jason.
Why? Is there anything wrong?
I don't know. But looking at his face now, I have the strangest feeling that he's not really a human being anymore. That something's missing. That he's a mad, vicious creation of a devil.
You're talking like a fool, David. Perhaps you're tired. I know I am. He can't get out of here. He'll lock the doors and the windows are barred. Let's go upstairs.
All right, Jason. But remember what I said. We placed him back on the table, taking the precaution of strapping him down in case he should awaken. Then Jason locked the doors and took the keys with him. We went upstairs.
Oh, I've been waiting for you.
Elaine, I thought you were asleep.
No, I couldn't sleep.
You should have come downstairs and joined us then, Elaine.
Brought him back?
Yes.
How did he react?
Not as well as he might have, Elaine.
Anything wrong?
No, nothing.
He tried to kill your father.
What?
He was merely trying to thank me, David. He's probably suffering from a sort of amnesia. He doesn't realize his own strength. He's like a baby.
You know that's not true, sir. He's an inhuman, vicious killer.
Oh, you should never have done this, Dad.
Would you both be quiet? I'm tired of listening to you.
What?
I don't like to admit it. But I know I've been wrong. I'm sorry, my dear. I lost my temper. I shouldn't have. I know it's because I think you're both partially right.
How do you mean, Jason?
There is something inhuman about that thing that was a man downstairs. I noticed it tonight when his hands were around my throat. In his eyes, that intangible something that makes an animal a man is missing. In its place, I see the eyes of a madman with no soul.
What are we going to do?
I don't know.
Maybe we haven't failed, sir. Maybe because we're tired, we think we have. It may look completely different to us after a few hours of sleep.
What was that?
Came from downstairs.
Waylon.
We had him strapped to the table.
He must have gotten loose.
That was the door. He's trying to knock the door down.
We have to stop him.
But how?
Elaine, get my gun.
All right, Dad. I'll be right back.
tried not to admit it, David, but that was only lying to myself. You and Elaine brought me to my senses. You were right all along, about the rabbit, about the other animals, and especially about Wayland. He must be destroyed. He's a monster without feeling.
Here, Dad, his gun.
Thanks. I'm going down there and...
You won't have to go down there. That was the door.
Listen, he's coming up the stairs.
Turn the lights out, David.
Yes, sir.
I'm going out in the hall to meet him.
No, Dad.
No, let him come in here. We'll stay right over here on this side of the room.
All right, David.
Be quiet.
He's coming.
I don't want to shoot him. We'll have to take him alive.
You'll have to shoot him.
Oh, yes, Dad.
He's just outside the door.
David, I'm afraid.
Be quiet.
There he is.
Where you close?
He's searching for me.
Shh, be quiet.
He's looking this way.
Stop it! He's beat us!
Use the gun, Jason.
Now, David.
Yes. I see it.
It's composed. It looks human again. Perhaps we're not meant to tamper with the natural laws of life and death, David. I see that now. But it took Wayland's return from death to prove it to me.
So runs tonight's tale of the unusual, the terrifying, the unknown. Join us again when next we journey down the corridors of the Hall of Fantasy to hear another strange tale of the supernatural. All characters and events portrayed in these programs are fictional, and any similarity to actual events or persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental.
The Hall of Fantasy, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 6th of April, 1953, on Mutual Radio. You are listening to an hour of sci-fi on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for a story repeated twice on this next program before this airing on April 13th, 1940. The Radio Guild, for the third time, presents an interesting story penned by Ranald McDougall called The Ineffable Essence of Nothing on the NBC Blue Network.
The Radio Guild offers this evening the third successive play by Ranald R. McDougall. The last 2 weeks, Mr. McDougall has given us new plays, never heard before. But for tonight, he has persuaded us to broadcast again a little something which he turned out in the fall of 1938, and which, in a fit of dissatisfaction, he perpetuated in a revised form later in the same year. It is called The Ineffable Essence of Nothing. The play proved most successful in 1938, and we've had many requests for its repetition. So here we go with Ranald McDougall's fantasy for radio, The Ineffable Essence of Nothing.
What in the name of... How very peculiar. Oh, stop a minute, Pendennis.
Oh, yes, sir.
That shop there, the antique shop. You ever seen it before?
No, sir. Can't say I have.
Nor can I. Strange. That sign in the window. How does that read to you?
It says the ineffable essence of nothing.
Now, what in the topsy-turvy world does that mean?
I don't know, sir.
The ineffable essence of nothing. That means nothing. Nothing at all. Now, how the deuce can a man sell nothing and make a living at it?
I don't know, sir.
Well, I'm going to find out. Oh, you can drive on home, Pendennis. Tell Mrs. Castle that I'll be there in plenty of time for dinner.
Oh, very well, sir.
The ineffable essence of nothing.
Hmm. And with this beginning, the National Broadcasting Company presents the second version of an unusual play, rewritten for this occasion by Ranald R. MacDougall.
What an odd-looking little place. I don't recall ever having seen it before. That sign. Strange, but it seems vaguely familiar. It seems a trifle absurd. The ineffable essence of nothing. I wonder what it really is. Well, there's one sure way of finding out. That's by going in.
Ah, good afternoon, Mr. Castle. I've been expecting you. You're delightfully prompt.
How do you know my name?
Oh, I know a great many people and consequently a great many names.
Yes, but it's strange that you should know mine. I've never been in your shop before.
Quite true. Nevertheless, you're one of my best customers.
Well, I don't understand. Oh, perhaps you have a shop elsewhere in the city.
No. As a matter of fact, I have no shop at all.
Oh, well, come now, old fellow. What do you call this if it isn't a shop?
Do you often travel on this street, Mr. Castle?
Yes. Yes, I do. Why?
Have you ever seen this shop before?
No, I can't say that I have.
Nor can anyone say that they have, Mr. Castle. This shop does not exist.
What?
Merely a product of my imagination.
Well, you're to be congratulated on the vividness of your imagination. I'd have sworn that all these beautiful antiques were real. This lamp, for instance, and that rug and the mirror over there.
Yes, yes, the lamp was created by me for a young man named Aladdin. You may have heard of him.
Aladdin's lamp?
Yes, the rug is the well-known flying carpet.
What?
And the mirror was made by me for a young girl named Alice. Through the looking glass, if you remember.
Do you really mean to say that... Oh, it's impossible.
Oh, nothing is impossible, Mr. Castle. Incidentally, it was I who coined that phrase, nothing is impossible.
It's become a trifle overused.
Yes, I'm afraid so, but it's as true as it ever was.
Now, I still don't understand. You say that I'm a customer of yours, but I don't remember ever having seen you before.
You never have, Mr. Castle.
Then what have I ever bought from you, Mr... What did you say was your name?
I didn't say, but it happens to be Mew. The ineffable essence of nothing, sole proprietor, Mr. Mew.
Hmm. If you don't mind, I'll call you just Mr. Mew.
I don't mind.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Mew, what have I ever bought from you?
The ineffable essence of nothing.
What the devil is that?
Dreams, Mr. Castle. Long dreams, short dreams, and dreams of all description.
You're the first insane shopkeeper I've ever had the pleasure to be dazzled by.
Oh, Mr. Castle, I can see that you do not believe that I sell dreams.
Well, Mr. Mew, perhaps if you were to give me a slight sample.
Very well. Close your eyes. Now, what do you see?
I see the most radiant, the most fascinating, the most ravishing.
Yes. Yes, she is beautiful, isn't she? One of my best dream girls. I only use her in the most difficult cases.
But all this is uncanny. It just can't happen. I must be dreaming.
Oh, no. I never give dreams away free of charge. And if you were dreaming, I'd surely know it.
Then it's some form of hypnosis. It must be.
You still do not believe me. Very well, then. If you'll allow me to examine my ledgers, I'll tell you some of the dreams I've sold you. May I?
By all means.
Castle. Ah, here we are. Ackroyd Castle. Now, let's see. When you were 17, you dreamed of being the king of a South Sea island, 43 hours, 25 minutes, no charge for native girls.
A very commonplace dream, Mr. Mew.
Not at all.
Now, just what do you mean by that?
Well, I will admit that such a dream is not unusual in a lad of 17 years, but your particular dream combined all the more popular aspects of Robinson Crusoe and a Turkish harem. Yes, very ornate it was. I don't mind telling you, Mr. Castle, that was some order you put in. It taxed even my skill at fashioning dreams.
What was the name of that island?
It had no name. Dreams never do. Oh, I see you're trying to catch me out.
Oh, well, as you said yourself, everyone dreams of a desert island at one time or another. No, Mr. Mew, I'm afraid you'll have to give me a more concrete example than that.
Very well, then. When you were 22, you dreamed of marrying a motion picture star. 17 hours, 10 minutes.
Oh, come now, Mr. Mew.
Well, last night, you dreamed of taking a life. Murder, Mr. Castle. That's why you came in here today, to buy one of the guns you saw in my window, just under the sign which caught your attention. I put out a tray of guns to lure you in.
Now I do believe you, Mr. Mew.
You're a hard man to convince.
Now that you have convinced me?
I'd like to sell you a dream, another dream, to take the place of the one you had last night.
I don't want any more.
I'll give you a bargain price, Mr. Castle.
No.
I won't charge you any time at all. And when you're through with the dream I offer you, you'll be in your car as it was 15 minutes ago.
Well, what is it? Some sort of fairy tale, I suppose. Something on the style of Aladdin's lamp, no doubt.
No, I cannot give you the lamp. But I can offer you a doorway.
A doorway? What in the world would I do with a doorway?
You could walk through it.
What's so wonderful about that?
Oh, doorways are the most delightful things in the world, Mr. Castle. You never know what is on the other side of them until you go through. Take that doorway in the back there, for instance. That door with the curious carvings and metal handle. On the other side, there might be almost anything. A great adventure, a beautiful romance, and possibly death. Will you step through that doorway?
I have very little to lose. And I trust you, Mr. Mew.
Oh, it isn't a matter of trust. I can't guarantee that what you find on the other side will be altogether pleasant.
Then why should I go through?
Why not? Are you afraid?
Supposing I am.
Well, I would not think badly of you for that, Mr. Castle, but I give you my solemn promise that death is not waiting for you on the other side of that door.
There are worse things than death, they say.
That may be, but fortunately I know nothing of the things that are worse than death. Therefore, you see, I'm not in a position to include them in the dreams that I sell.
Well, I...
Why don't you step through that door, Mr. Castle?
Very well, Mr. Mew. I will.
Goodbye, Mr. Castle.
What do you mean?
After you step through the door, you'll never see me again. But before you go, let me give you this advice. When dreams are easily recognized as being dreams, all is well. But when they become too real, it is time to stop sleeping.
And what does that mean?
Step through the door and find out.
Hey, give me another gloss of off and off with a blooming big hunger cheese. Absolutely right,
if I ever get my hands on her, I'll kill her, sure. No squid ain't about to pick my pocket and get away with it, young.
Well, silly, I won't tell her. Hockey
ship is third mate on the Bombay Prince.
This is my cafe. What's the matter? Can't you read? It's a big sign over the door as you come in. The biggest and best electric sign in Cairo.
Cairo?
That's what I said.
But Cairo's in Egypt.
And where the hell do you think you are?
Good, I thought I... That is, I thought I was in love.
You're crazy. You're drunk. I don't care which, as long as you buy a soap or something. If you're crazy, a little whiskey will make you easy to have. If you're drunk, you'll just get drunker. What'll it be?
Oh, scotch and soda.
We're all out of scotch and soda.
Oh, very well. I don't care much.
Let the gentleman have some from my private bottle, Mike.
Okay, Mr. Aykroyd.
Wait a minute. Who's that?
Lummy, you are crazy. That's Aykroyd the gambler. He's the most cunning, the most dishonest outcast in Cairo. Everybody knows him.
You said he was an outcast?
Yeah, he done something back home. About 10 years ago it was. Been here ever since. Drinks nothing but scotch.
And very good scotch it is.
Ain't it the truth? He makes me order it for him every month.
What did he do back home?
It ain't healthy to ask so many questions, young'un.
But I'm interested.
Then supposing you ask him what he done back home.
Very well, I will.
Don't be a fool, young'un.
Oh, Mr. Aykroyd.
What do you want?
My name is Castle. I said my
name... I heard you. Sit down, Mr. Castle. And don't talk for a minute.
I just came over to thank you.
Shut up.
Now, look here, you...
My dear Mr. Castle, I've been known to be distinctly unpleasant with people who talk when I want them to be quiet. Now, shut up. I'm trying to think. Where do you come from?
London.
When?
Today.
How?
Well, I...
Don't lie. You didn't come by boat. There hasn't been any for a week. How did you get here?
I came through the shop of Mr. Mew.
What are you talking about?
That door over there. On the other side is an antique shop.
Ah, you're mad. There's nothing on the other side of that door but a particularly filthy street of Cairo. You're an out-and-out liar, Mr. Castle.
Now, look here, Mr. Aykroyd. Whether I'm in Cairo or London, you can't talk to me like that.
You seem to overlook the fact that I am talking to you like that.
And I say, why are you so frightened by me?
Am I frightened by you?
Yes. It shows in your eyes. And you were disturbed when you heard my name was Castle. What does the name of Castle mean to you? Who are you?
Offhand, I should say it was you who should offer explanations. Well... Who are you?
I've already told you. My name is Aykroyd Castle.
Aykroyd Castle?
So I've said.
Mr. Castle, listen carefully. I cannot stress too greatly the importance of your doing as I say. Believe me, I do not exaggerate when I say that your very life hinges on your actions in the next few minutes. Do you understand?
Well, what is it you want me to do?
I have a suite of rooms upstairs. I want you to get up quietly and walk up those stairs over there. I'll be right behind you. So, be careful.
Why exactly are you interested in me?
Up those stairs, Mr. Castle. And now, into that room, Mr. Castle.
The door is closed.
Well?
I'd feel more comfortable if you opened it. I don't trust doorways any too much, Mr. Aykroyd.
Very well.
Now, Mr. Aykroyd, would you mind explaining what this is all about?
Mr. Castle, there's something very strange about you. As a matter of fact, you're a picture. A picture of me. Your voice and your face are like mine were 10 years ago. And your name is Castle.
What do you mean?
Back in 1940...
This is 1940.
This is 1951. What are you talking about?
Oh, yes, I'm beginning to see. I beg your pardon. Sometimes I get confused.
I've noticed that.
You were saying...
I was saying back in 1940, my name was Castle. Aykroyd Castle.
What?
Yes. I had to leave England hurriedly. I got into a little trouble.
Unless I'm very much mistaken, Mr. Aykroyd, you committed murder.
You just condemned yourself to death, Mr. Castle. For 10 years, I have lived in haste and in fear, waiting for a tap on the shoulder which never came until today. During those 10 years, I have had the opportunity to promise myself that I would not be taken easily. You understand me?
Yes, you mean you'll kill me first. But that doesn't cause me any particular concern at the moment.
No?
No. Mr. Aykroyd, would it alarm you if I were to tell you that you don't exist?
I suppose that is why you pity me.
You don't believe me any more than I believe, Mr. Mew.
Oh, come, mister. Whatever your real name is, why all this pretense? What do you hope to gain by it?
Nothing. The ineffable essence of nothing, in fact.
The ineffable essence of nothing? What the devil is that?
That, my dear Mr. Aykroyd, is you. You're nothing. Less than nothing, as a matter of fact. A zero is nothing, but at least it has tangibility and a basis in truth. You have tangibility. But your only basis in truth is the fact that I might have committed a murder had I never seen you.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It isn't important that you know. What I'm trying to tell you is that I'm not of the police. My only interest in you is the interest one has in seeing around a corner. I am you, Mr. Aykroyd, but you're not I, and you never will be. I'll take good care of that.
Stop talking in senseless riddles. Who are you? And what do you want of me?
My name, as I told you, is Aykroyd Castle.
I am Aykroyd Castle.
We're both Aykroyd Castle.
What?
I am he as he is, and you are he as he would be. I'm real, but you are only the shadow of coming events. No, you'll never exist, Mr. Aykroyd. And that's why I pity you.
You're mad. Such things do not happen.
You're trying to make
Ackroyd! What's the matter, Ackroyd? Is it the police?
Stay out of this, Olga. It doesn't concern you.
But I heard quarreling. Who's that man?
What's the matter with you? You act as though you'd seen a ghost.
Yes, I have. That man, he is. Oh, it can't be.
Can't be what? Am I the only sane person in this room?
That man is the person I fell in love with 10 years ago.
What's the matter with you, you fool? You fell in love with me.
Look at him, Ackroyd. Can't you see? Who is this man who looks so much like you?
He says he is me.
And so I am.
Mr. Castle, you're beginning to bore me. I suppose you know I must, let us say, dispose of you.
By all means, let us say, dispose of me.
Aren't you a trifle frightened at the prospect?
Should I be?
You're either a very brave man or a stupid fool. Whichever you are, it doesn't change my plans for you.
You probably won't understand, Mr. Ackroyd, but nothing you can say or do will frighten me.
Really? And why not?
Because you're merely a product of the very active imagination of a certain Mr. Mew.
Oh, we're back again to that, are we?
Yes. And this time I'm going to prove that you and I are the same person.
Very well. You have my permission. Prove to me that you and I are the same person.
When we were 15, Mr. Ackroyd, you and I, we tried to enlist in the army and gave our ages 18 using the name of... Let me see. I think it was the headmaster at school. Tarbell? That's it. Tarbell.
How did you know? I never told...
You never told anyone. Nor did you ever tell anyone about the time you fell and cut your knee while out of bounds. You didn't even tell your mother, but you still have that scar on your knee, Mr. Ackroyd.
Olga, get out of here.
You're beginning to be frightened, aren't you, Mr. Ackroyd? You're beginning to realize that you and I are the same person 10 years apart.
It can't be. I am real. Look, I have blood and flesh as strong as yours.
But I have the soul. No, Mr. Ackroyd. You don't exist and you never will. I'll take good care of that.
I don't know what you're talking about. I won't listen to any more. You're trying to drive me mad.
No, I'm merely trying to explain to you.
Be quiet. Be quiet. If you say any more, I'll kill you.
You can't even do that. You're a poor, harmless shadow.
Shadow, am I? Harmless, am I? We'll see.
Ackroyd, don't shoot. The police.
Damn the police.
So you see, Mr. Ackroyd, by testing my reality, you've destroyed yourself. Just as a soap bubble bursts when it touches a brick wall.
Don't understand. Aimed for you. How did I hit myself?
I don't know exactly. Perhaps it's because you are less real than I am. Or perhaps the dream is beginning to bore Mr. Mew and he wishes to end it quickly. Well, it's done with now.
Oh, smug, aren't you? Well, not sorry. Not sorry for anything. I've had a certain amount of fun. Don't regret it. Except you, Olga.
I did love you once, Ackroyd.
A long time ago, wasn't it? That day gave you a lift in car. Didn't know it would end like this. Strange way for a ride to end. Oh, business. Strange.
He's dead.
Yes. You know, I can't help feeling a trifle proud of the way I would have died. It's a very strange thought. We two were one, and yet he was a stranger to me. He lived 10 years of my life that I shall never live. How did you come to meet him, Olga?
It was early summer. My car broke down on the road. He was passing by in his limousine. He was wealthy. You understand? And he stopped to give me a lift. That was the first time I met him.
It's all very odd. I don't see.
Somebody heard the shot. They think we killed him.
Well, I suppose we should get out of here for your sake, Olga. Doesn't matter a great deal to me. My life in Cairo is nearly done, I'm afraid.
no time to talk and pray. You must get away from here. Come, I'll throw you this way, quickly.
Where are we going?
Across the roof and down through one of the buildings onto another street. It's our only chance.
Wouldn't it be simpler if I stayed behind and let them catch me? They can do no harm. And...
somewhere along here, there's a door. A small wooden door with a brass handle. Somewhere in this passage. Hurry, we must find it. Oh, it's so dark. Feel along that wall. Hurry, please. It's our only way to the street.
Doorways certainly are playing an important part in my life today.
Here it is. I found it. It is dark. I can't open it. Got to open.
Perhaps it's locked.
It can't be locked. It mustn't be locked. But it is. You help me bring it down.
That's not necessary. I'd open it without a key. There you are.
How could you do that?
Oh, never mind, Olga. You'd better run along if you're going to.
Oh, yes, of course. Down these stairs and we are safe. What are you waiting for?
I'm not going with you, Olga.
Why not? Are you mad? If they catch you...
I'm very interested in seeing what will happen when they catch me. So get along with you, my dear. Step through the doorway and close it behind you like a good little girl.
But I don't understand.
It isn't necessary, Olga. Just step through that door.
Well, if that's the way you want it. They're coming. Goodbye, my friend.
Goodbye, Olga. Well, gentlemen, I've been expecting you.
Get him! Get him!
I haven't any gun.
Oh, yeah?
Must you shine that torch into my eyes?
Oh, so sorry, Your Highness. Pokey, aren't you got no respect for your betting? Where do you get off shining a torch? It's a member of the aristocracy.
Sorry, Your Excellency. I shine him elsewhere.
Wait a minute. Shine your torch on that door again.
Well, I ain't got no gun. All I can find is some change in a blooming pencil sharpener. It's a cinch. With no
penknife. A door.
No.
The curious carvings. The metal handle. It's the very same door I went through. The door from Mr. Mew's shop.
Oh, lemme. The bloke is off his chump. Here, you. What's he do with the gun, eh?
Gun? What?
Yeah.
Oh, the gun Aykroyd was shot with.
What in here do you think I've been talking about? Where is it?
Well, I gave it to the girl. Yes. And she's waiting for you to open that door so she can let you have it.
Oh, she is. Is she? Well, Ollie, supposing you open that there door. And if you get shot, well, we'll say a little prayer for you.
You really want me to open that door?
That's what I said. Then hurry up about it.
Very well, then. I have a feeling I won't be seeing much of you after I step through, gentlemen. So I'll say goodbye.
No,
Agnes, you done me a great service. Hereafter, I'll take care to buy all my dreams from you and from no one else.
Beg pardon, sir.
Ah, yeah. And Dennis, is that you?
What, sir?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to frighten you. How'd I get in the car?
I don't understand, sir.
I remember going through the door, and now I'm in the car. Happened in between?
Well, I'm sure I don't know, sir. You just asked me to stop the car, and that's all.
Did I say anything about seeing a mysterious antique shop with a curious sign in the window?
No, sir, never a word. You just told me to stop the car, that's all you said, sir. Just tell me to stop the car. No antique shop round here, sir.
Yes, so there isn't. Well, you can start up again.
Very well, sir.
Open, Dennis.
Sir?
How long was it before I spoke to you after I asked you to stop the car?
Well, sir, you just said stop a minute, Pendennis. Then you stared out the window with a funny look on your face for a second or two, and then you mumbled something which I didn't hear, sir. That's all, so help me, sir.
Just a couple of seconds, eh? What was it Mr. Mew said about time?
I won't charge you any time at all, Mr. Castle. When you're through with the dream I offer you, you'll be in your car as it was 15 minutes ago.
I beg your pardon, sir, but... Well, is there anything wrong, sir?
Oh, no, I'm really quite all right, Pendennis. Now...
Oh, very good, sir. You had such a funny look on your face, sir,
Yes, Pendennis. I'm afraid I was dreaming. Or was it a dream? I wonder.
Look, sir. Someone having motor trouble up ahead.
What? Motor trouble? Oh. A woman, isn't it?
Oh, yes, sir. One of them foreign-looking females. Slinky type, sir. Shall we stop and give her a lift, sir?
No. Absolutely not. Drive right on, Pendennis.
You tonight the second performance in its second version of The Ineffable Essence of Nothing, written and rewritten by Ranald R. MacDougall. Appearing in the cast were Ian Martin as Mr. Castle, Eric Dressler as Mr. Mew, Ian McAllister as Pendennis, Howard Smith, the bartender, Harry Neville as Aykroyd, Lotta Stavisky as Olga, and Kay Lee as Nellie. This has been a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City, New York.
The Radio Guild on Tuned to Yesterday from April 13th, 1940, an NBC Blue Network broadcast. And so closes this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.